You know about Mr. Noodles on TikTok?
No.
It's this guy. He's got this like 13-year-old pug. I don't know how old. It's like an old pug. And he has his own TikTok. And every day he picks up Mr. Noodles and he sees if Mr. Noodles stands up or flops back down. And then that tells you whether it's a bones day or a no bones day. And if it's a no bones day, what that means is you can take it easy. You don't have to push yourself. You can just have some self-care. If it's a bones day, it means you got to get out there and, you know, conquer the world, Mr. Noodles says. Mr. Noodles is pretty dope. He's like super old and does not give a shit. He'll like stand at his, what reminded me of it was Henry's bed. Mr. Noodles will like stand at his little donut bed and bark to be placed onto the bed. He's not going to climb up onto the bed. You're going to pick him up. And he'll just sit there and bark and be like, fuck you, man. Put me up on the bed.
Well, I hope Mr. Noodles is doing okay.
Yeah, me too. Otherwise, how would we know whether there's a bones day or a no bones day? All right. Well, now that we've got that out of the way, it is time for me and my co-host, It's Blunty, to do the new product roundup for April, May, June 2022.
Yeah.
Good to see you again, Blunty. We have a list of hot new products in FPV this month. We're going to tell you about it. We're going to give you our off-the-cuff, probably uninformed, generally incorrect thoughts. At the end, we'll do a giveaway. We'll give away some of them. You know, Blunty, before we get into it, we were looking at the list and you had an observation about new products.
Yes. Yeah, I was saying that I think we're really starting to, I feel like every month we do this, we can see more and more the sort of decline of actual new products. I think, you know, we saw that a lot as we got into the chip shortage. And now that we're pushing farther and farther and farther into the chip shortage, we're seeing less and less new products. And we're seeing more and more like V2 or V3 versions of products that are like almost just BOM revisions, you know, bill of materials revisions based on having to use different chips and stuff. So,
It's hard to know how much of that is trends in the hobby. There certainly are people who have prognosticated that the hobby is declining. Versus just the difficulty of making everything in this day and age. I do agree with you, though. You know, every month we spend a half hour to an hour looking at new products. We go through all the stores and we just look at what's there. And I do remember times when there was just so much stuff and we were like, yeah, I don't know, which is going to make the cut? It doesn't feel like we're doing that quite as much. Like there's just props and maybe a V2 of a flight controller. But there's also not the same kind of seven new companies formed this month who you've never heard of before, and every single one of them has a flight controller out. And you're like, who are these people? It's mostly the same old players.
Yeah, I think even, you know, we've seen some reduction in a lot of the releases that we saw from a lot of companies, you know. So if anything, we're seeing less releases from old players. So
yeah. But regardless, there is new stuff to talk about, and there are a couple of really exciting things. And that's why we're going to start off with our top products in any category and the one that we have to talk about. Probably the most exciting product this month has got to be the Fat Shark Dominator HD. Or is it from Fat Shark?
Yeah. Well, I think anybody who's been paying attention to the hobby in the last a few weeks has definitely, I'm sure, already heard a lot of this. But yeah, there's been a lot of confusion about where the system is from and who the system is and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, we did get a new reveal at Rampage, right about at Rampage, that you were present for. The Fat Shark released the new Dominator system, which is a goggle and VTX and camera set digital system of a, seems like a variable latency system, very similar in DJI, to DJI in function and form.
Yeah. And I know that there are a lot of people out there who are really over talking about this. And so we're not going to spend 15 minutes diving into all the ins and outs. In fact, you and I did a whole episode of the news dedicated to the ins and outs and the behind the scenes and the questions and answers. And, you know, so we'll just link that in the video description. But the bottom line is, as you said, this is a 720p or there's a 1080p mode digital HD video transmission system. Seems like it's actually made by a company called Walksnail, and then Fat Shark designs and makes the goggle, but Walksnail designs the actual digital video link. The reason that's interesting is that there's also, we see here, a FlyWoo version of this goggle, which is just clearly the exact same goggle. So it looks like Fat Shark won't be the only one selling it. And you can pre-order the Flywoo Avatar or the Walksnail Avatar, or you can get it from Fat Shark from any of the US vendors. We've got links in the video description to all the stores where you might pick this stuff up. I guess, Blunty, what people are wondering is, like, should I jump on this? Is this it? Is this the new thing? You know, what kind of value can we provide in this video without diving into the whole sort of morass?
Yeah, I think we were pretty clear in the video if you watched that. And there have been a couple of other people who were, I think, on the same page with this. But, you know, I think generally speaking, the state that we saw the system in at Rampage and the vehemency, I guess, I don't know how you want to put it, of Fat Shark to say this is releasing by the end of June means that I think most people should stay away from this until we see how the system releases and progresses over the first month or two with the early adoption and with just where the software ends up and also what alternatives end up on the market, like the Flywoo goggles and other things.
Yeah, there's so many uncertainties. And one of the uncertainties is that the sample that we were allowed to try at Rampage, and it wasn't just YouTube influencers, but it was open to the public. Anyone could try them. But they were feature incomplete, like the DVR didn't work. There was an error message on screen that didn't go away, but they'd said, that's just code. And for it to release in June with those kind of things still undone, I think that definitely it's a wait and see, unless you're just dying to be an early adopter, in which case more power to you. And a lot of people were. But with so many other things on the horizon, including the DJI V3, the future of the DJI V2 being uncertain, this system, which has a lot of potential, and the HD Zero goggles, which also look interesting, I think that definitely, all the time I've been in FPV, there is has never been a time when I was less excited to say, go buy this new thing right now. There's never been a time when I've been more hesitant, if you will. This is the most hesitant I would be right now to spend money on a new set of goggles.
Yeah, absolutely. I definitely would agree with that.
Like,
I think,
three different ways.
Yeah, hopefully we'll know in the next few months how everything plays out, and it'll be a little more clear as to where people should end up with their goggles.
Okay. Well, if you do decide that you want to get any of the products in the roundup, there are links down in the video description below. There are also timestamps and chapter markers, both in the video description and the timeline. These tend to be long videos, so if you're getting a little bored with whatever we're talking about, just skip to the next chapter or find a product you're interested in. Those links are affiliate links, and that means that a great way for you to support the channel is to click those links before you make any purchase at the affiliated store. I get a small commission, and it doesn't cost you anything, so it's an easy way for you to support me. Well, there's one other product that I thought should go in the top products right now, and it is the Bubito Bind and Fly. This is Bubby's little 1S micro quad. Normally I wouldn't put this in top products, but I was at Rampage a couple weeks ago and they were flying this, and it flies so good and looked like so much fun that I thought it was worth a shout out. I don't have a lot of experience flying quads this small, except for Whoops, which have ducts. How about you, Blunty?
I'm not super familiar. I'm sure it's a fun little ripper, and we've seen similar products. I think Newbie Drone did something close to this with a small quad.
Yeah, the Mosquito. The Newbie Drone Mosquito. Here's some video of Bubby flying it at Rambo. Oh, that's a cool cut. You see what he did with the cut? Right as he goes through the gate. He thinks it flies better without ducts, and that's probably true.
Well, 100%.
Everything does.
I'm sure that's true. Yeah, and it's less weight, so.
Yeah. It sure looks like it rips. Of course, Bubby's a great pilot, could probably make a lot of things look that good. I guess the question that I have about something like this is, like, with a tiny Whoop, when you bounce off a wall, you just bounce off and you keep going. How true is that going to be for something like this?
Sure.
I guess I don't know.
This is going to be more of a, flying and crashing and breaking, like, freestyle quad, I would expect.
That being said, if you have the chops to do stuff like this, it sure can open up a world of freestyle in a way that Whoops can freestyle, but I don't think most Whoops at freestyle will fly like this. We'll check that out. It's available both as a bind and fly and as a build kit that you can build yourself on the Rotor Riot website. We've got links in the video description. Alrighty, Blunty. Let's go into the categories. What category are we going to start with this month?
First up, we've got something people have been asking for a while. We had a little bit of a tease from Diatone. I think we got some samples of those, and they never released them. But we finally got some ESCs with AM32 flashed right out of the book, which normally these BL32 ESCs, the 32-bit ESCs, all have BL Heli 32, and you pay a little extra for that license fee, and then you can't flash off of it. They're kind of locked until you use a tool. So now we get an open source 32-bit ESC released, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, this is exciting. I did an interview with Pete Smits, who was the developer of the AM32 firmware. And basically one day he woke up and said, you know what? It sucks that there's no open source firmware for 32-bit ESCs. And he said, how hard could it be to write one? And then 2 years later, he finished the first release of AM32. And, I guess that's just what he thinks is a fun thing to do for 2 years. But it's cool that he's done it. Because BL Heli S is open source, and there's all these third-party open source tools and improvements that people have been making, and nobody can do that with BL Heli 32 because it's closed source.
It's neat to see this option now, because we've got a lot of features that are more open. So, you know, we've got, like, slow start is something that's a common thing on, like, FETTECH ESCs that people enjoy from KISS, and now you can have slow start because AM32 just implemented that in an open source fashion.
That alone is, I don't know if people know what we're talking about, but it's where instead of the motor going, it goes, kind of, well, it's not quite that slow, but it's, I don't know why it's so cool to have a motor start like that, but it totally is.
Well, I'm sure it's better on like stall torque and like, or like stall amps and stuff. I come from like, you know, I did a bunch of HVAC work, and if you fire a compressor from not moving and you fire it really quickly, it's that locked rotor amp takes a lot to unlock. So I'm sure there's something from that slow start that also would help voltage spikes and things too. So, and it's fun to watch.
Yeah. So the downside of AM32 until now has been that if you wanted to use it, you had to buy a BL Heli 32 ESC, and then with a fairly fiddly flashing process, you had to flash it with AM32. Yeah. But by buying it pre-flashed from SkyStars, you can just use any normal pass-through flashing.
Yeah, I was going to say, to be clear, it's not just as easy as like, hey, let me download this program and do a specific thing to make it flash. You actually have to use a tool and solder to the pads to flash through the BL32 bootloader. And then get to the AM32. So, but it's pretty cool to see this off the shelf.
Right. You don't have to do that with the SkyStars hardware. They're pre-flashed, and you can literally just use BL Heli pass-through or AM32. So there's a link in the video description to my interview with Pete Smits. Bear in mind that interview was some time ago, and the firmware has progressed. So the features that you see there are new features since then. Maybe it's time for an update now that this product is out. But if you're interested in trying something different than BL Heli 32 or in exploring and developing an open source 32-bit firmware, AM32 is out there. And thanks to SkyStars for being the first. I guess Diatone was technically the first, but I don't think they actually put their product into like production. So thanks to SkyStars for actually giving us a product we can buy.
I believe they worked with, I was going to say, I think they worked with some of the ExpressLRS developers on that. I believe in particular, Jai Smith helped them get that working and help them troubleshoot through a lot of the issues. So pretty cool.
Blunty, I am really conflicted about our next product because on the one hand, I think that all-in-one ESC plus flight controller in one board, flight controllers are not durable enough for big quads. They're okay for toothpicks and maybe little lightweight 3-inch and 4-inch, but for 5-inch big honking, they're just not durable enough. But I also think that Akon makes some of the best, most reliable hardware in FPV, and that's why this product has me so conflicted.
Yeah, I would absolutely understand where you're coming from there. I know a lot of people have had success with, you know, 35 or 40 amp AIOs in the past, and some people are flying those. And then we saw it was 45 amp and 55 amp were the iFlight Beast, right? Mm-hmm. Now we're getting a 60 amp from, like you said, someone I would typically trust pretty well as Akon to deliver a quality product. So, you know, a lot of this will be not just build quality, but also heat dissipation and what build you're putting in and all those kind of things, because there's a lot on one little board. But I think it's cool to see this, and hopefully this works out well for folks. And also the cost, if you look at what you're getting, is not bad considering the world we're living in right now. You know, $96 for an F7 AIO and ESC that's 60 amp is pretty good.
Yeah, what are you getting? Can you describe the product?
Yeah, so essentially you're getting a, you know, 6S capable flight controller with a, you know, 6S capable ESC that's 60 amp. You're getting a BLHeli S instead of 32, but you know, that's fine, instead of paying the extra $5. I'm personally of the opinion that it's not a big difference, but
yeah, especially if you put Blue Jay firmware on there, it's going to give you probably everything you need.
Yeah, and then you're also getting, you know, typically what you're getting with an F7. So you're getting a whole mess of, you know, UARTs that are accessible. You're getting onboard black box. This one uses the BMI gyro, which I think we said before, we're going to see a lot more of the BMI and the ICMs, and just a bunch of different options, it looks like, for people on this thing.
So. Now, when I first saw this and I saw 6S, 60 amp ESC, I thought, well, this is clearly for like a full-size 5-inch freestyle quad. But it has 25 millimeter toothpick style mounting with, oh my God, M2. I just saw this. M2 hardware. Those are M2 screw holes, not M3. And no 5-inch frame is very, very few of them are going to have 25 millimeter mounting with M2 hardware. So what is this actually for? What build is going to need a 60 amp ESC and be running a 25 millimeter mounting pattern?
Yeah, I guess we're looking at, you know, something that's an option for, like, I guess, really hardcore toothpicks, something like that.
Oh, I see. I looked at the actual product description. I know, what a concept. It says it's designed for heavier Cinewhoops. That makes a lot of sense. Cinewhoops, especially when you add a lot of weight, can go up in amps and need a little bit beefier flight controller. And many of them do have that 25 millimeter mounting. High performance toothpick style builds. Hard to imagine a 6S toothpick.
I guess it's going to depend on the frame you put it in, but Cinewhoops, for me, I always think about like how packed typical Cinewhoop designs are inside of the frame, and mm-hmm. It definitely would concern me to run a 60 amp AIO that's not getting any breathing room. Those FETs are going to be cooking, I would imagine. You know,
yeah,
that
I mean,
would be my thought process.
The counter argument one could make is that by oversizing, that if you're only pulling 40 amps and you put 60 amp rated ESC in there, it'll handle that heat better. Yeah. So that's maybe a counter argument. It does hang out a lot over the edge, though. It's not going to fit in every frame. Still.
Yeah. Also, USB is in a weird spot. I wonder if this was designed for something specific, because normally we see it on the edge and not on the corner.
I agree. It's feeling like this was designed for a specific frame, but it doesn't really seem to say what that frame might be. If you know what this was designed for, then let us know down in the comments. All right. Well, it's perfect for somebody. Next up, Blunty. Speaking of all-in-ones where I don't trust the durability, here's the Newbie Drone Infinity AIO. And I want to be clear. I'm not specifically calling into question the durability of the Newbie Drone Infinity AIO V2. I have no information as to whether it's better or worse than average. But in general, AIOs, because they have to pack so much circuitry in there, and because of heat buildup and heat dissipation, they tend to be less durable. And this thing is $150.
Yeah, it's quite a contrast with the one we just looked at, which was also an F7 AIO, the 722 versus 745. So a little more longevity in the Newbie Drone. But, you know, it's 60 amp on the Akon versus 55 amp here. This one is 32 bit, but, you know, you're paying another 50% more for this option. So it is kind of quite a contrast. So hopefully they've done the work. You know, it does appear to be a giant heatsink on both sides, which is good for sinking that
increase longevity. The
Yeah. So I think that speaks to the complaints I was talking about with the Akon. Hopefully this is gonna last you, but it is tough to pay $150 for your stack all in one piece and then to have a little bit break after replace the whole thing.
Yeah, so. It does. I feel like the increased price in flight controllers and ESCs, which has happened over the last 2 years due to component cost increases, right? A lot of people would say, they're gouging us. I'm not going to go there. But everything's gotten more expensive, and I think it has steered more people towards individual flight controllers and ESCs. And some people are even talking about going away from 4-in-1 ESCs to individual ESCs, so that at least when you blow one, you can replace only the part that broke.
One of my main two quads is still running single ESCs with the old JBF4. It is nice to only have to replace one ESC at a time. So,
running a JBF4, I'm touched. The Newbie Drone Infinity AIO V2 does make a few changes compared to the original V1 that I think are going to make people, including me, happy. The original one worked with the DJI Caddx system only. It didn't have an analog circuit. The new one, this listing is wrong. this is old leftover text. The new one has added an input for a camera and VTX, so you can do analog with it if you prefer. And they've added just a shitload of pins here in this plug, so you get more UARTs. There were only like 2 UARTs available, so it's a little more versatile. And that was my other complaint. As long as you're paying that much, like to only have access to 1 or 2 UARTs was a little annoying. So it's nice that they've made those changes. I would say, if they're going to advertise it as, where's the advertisement? What'd they say? The board that can last forever. If you really mean it, newbie drone, then you need to put your money where your mouth is. And you need to, like, I'm not saying you should have a lifetime, no questions asked replacement warranty. But if you're going to advertise it, if you're going to sell it at this price and advertise it as last forever, you need to put your money where your mouth is in some meaningful way. I don't know what that is. It's you're the business people, and I'm just a YouTuber who talks smack. But that's what I would say. We got 2 more flight controllers, Blunty, from Matek. Matek makes some of the coolest and most interesting flight controllers out there for really a little bit more unusual, at least according to my audience, needs. We've got the Matek F405 Wing flight controller, which is their wing-focused one. Can run iNav, Betaflight, I think it can run ArduPilot, I believe. And this one has a built-in ESP32 chip, so it can do Express LRS or Wi-Fi-based telemetry. And then over here, we've got the Matek F405 HDTE, and I don't even know what that is.
Yeah, it looks like the HDTE has a built-in BEC, like a sort of a solder-on attachable BEC to power the stuff you're running in it. So, you know, you're soldering on a 12-volt BEC, and then the VX, you know, which would normally be your 9-volt or 12-volt or whatever the DJI is that VX is just the power from that pad. So then you're getting whatever you need for your DJI or any other things you would run. So maybe you're running a wing and you need another thing that has a different power requirement. I think that's pretty neat that it's a little more flexible in that way.
This one confused me a little bit because when I first saw it, I thought that was a 5-volt regulator designed to power servos. So you could have a high-powered 5-volt regulator, but it's not. It's a 12-volt regulator for the air unit. And most flight controllers that want to have a 9-volt or a 12-volt regulator for the air unit just build it into the flight controller. So I guess I'm a little confused what Matek is doing here. They even say they include that BEC. So it's not even like they're letting you source your own BEC. Why didn't they just build it into the flight controller?
I assume so. There's more options. So, if you wanted to use a different BEC or if you needed different requirements, you could do it with that. Also interesting, they're using a new ICM gyro, one I'm not familiar with, which is the 42688P, which is, I believe, from the new set of ICMs, what InventSense would recommend people to use. So,
okay.
Also, 11 motor outputs. It seems like this is designed so you can, you know, do 8 motors and servos if you need the servos.
Oh yeah.
Let's see what else was on here. Oh, a mega flash, which is kind of interesting. It is still an F405, so at least I'm not F11 or 411. And then there was
12S
input.
Yeah. That's one of the things that makes this board really stand out. Maybe that has something to do with why they didn't build the voltage regulator onto the board. Maybe that was difficult for them to build a 12S capable regulator, so they just sourced one.
What
if they literally couldn't source the components for the regulator, but they could buy the regulators pre-assembled, and that's how they worked around it? 2022 is working out to be really freaky.
Also, this has got 2 connectors on the bottom for 2 ESCs, so if you need to run, 8 motors,
you can do like that hexacopter or something.
Yeah, for 2 4-in-1. So
fancy. Yeah, going to be a big Cine. This is a good Cine lifter flight controller, isn't it?
Yeah, the only downside for anyone here is going to be 405, and that's just going to depend on available UARTs and processing power that you need. But I think for a lot of people who are not trying to run something fancy on this and just need a good FC with all kinds of features, especially for an Octo, I think this is pretty cool. It's $65. That seems really, really great for where we're at in the market right now.
I see 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 UARTs at least, full UARTs. Yeah.
And an S-Bus, which might be another UART.
Or it might double or might not. Yeah. But yeah. Yeah. This looks like a really good flight controller for a certain type of person. $65. Can't argue with that.
Also, they even broke out the D-pads. Or the D-pads are for the USB, right? So if you needed them.
Oh, my God. You're right. If you bust off your USB connector, you can solder on USB pads. Wow. That's hot.
Mate. Yeah. All kinds of stuff.
All right. Valenti, I get a lot of emails from people saying, do you want to try our new action camera? And most of the time, I am not interested because most sort of Chinese action cameras are just not that good compared to the stuff we have access to. But Hawkeye sent me this Firefly X-Lite 2. And I remembered that the Hawkeye Firefly was an okay naked camera. So I checked it out. And it's got some really interesting features that I thought made it worth mentioning. So it's a 4K 60 action camera, 12 megapixel sensor, et cetera, et cetera. We can look for reviews of it to check the image quality. I have one and I'll be reviewing it. So you can stick around, get subscribed if you want to see that. But what made this stand out for me, two things. Number one is it includes a balance plug adapter in the box. That's kind of nice. Usually you have to make that yourself. And number two, one of the problems with these cameras is that you can't set the settings on them. And it has this, which is an AV cable that plugs into the camera and lets you use a joystick to change the camera settings by looking inside your goggles. That's pretty cool.
All right, next up, we're going to look at the TBS Source One V5, the fifth version of the TBS Source One frame. The Source One, if you don't know somehow, is the open source frame that Team Black Sheep has been, I guess, sponsoring or like making sure is cut. I'm not exactly sure what the process is there, but I know they have like a GitHub repo and a Discord, and everybody kind of gets together and helps with the designs, and they take influence from other people. And then they open source at some point, they open source the design for other people to cut. So they could also make their own frame or make modifications to the frame. And yeah, now we've got the V5, which is the new version.
Yeah, this is so cool because they can release it at a very low price, essentially the price of the carbon, because all of the design work is done by the community for free. And, you know, if that was in some way dishonest or exploitative, then we'd have a problem with it. But everybody participates for free on their own time and volunteers, and TBS says, and then TBS publishes the files. So you could literally download the DXF files and cut them yourself if you have a CNC machine. Or modify them. And in fact, other companies do that as well. The V4 of the Source One was a little controversial because it really changed the design compared to the V3. Got a lot more lightweight, and some people said less durable. The V5 looks like a continuation of the V4, though, pretty much the same. In fact, we're not even sure what the differences are we, Blenty?
Yeah, I've heard that the only things I know for sure are 6mm arms. That's what I was told. And then there's some kind of central piece, but I don't see it in any of the pictures or marketing material. But there's some kind of central locking piece that's new that helps the arms lock together better. But I wasn't able to find any good concrete information on that.
Okay. Well, no matter what you think, the TBS Source One at a price of $30 is priced similar to many sort of cheap clone frames that you maybe have to hold your nose and buy. And with this one, you have no ethical, you know, you can sleep at night knowing that everybody's been fairly compensated for their work. And since it's got all this community input, it's a pretty decent design and has a lot of accessories, 3D printed accessories and so forth available for it out there.
Yeah, I'm a huge fan of the V3. The Source One V3 is one of my favorite frames because of the price and because of the durability. You can just smack it all around. I haven't had a lot of issues with it at all. So,
you feel like the V4 is worse.
Yeah, the V4 was not. It got rid of things. I don't care about weight. I don't care about looks or anything like sleek or anything like that. And so it was thinner arms and less durability. And it seemed to me not really a thing for me. So this is thicker arms. So hopefully they're more in that durability direction. I'm interested to see people fly it and see what they think about it. So also, it looks like the files are not up yet to cut. We did check before we recorded. The V4 is up there, but I didn't see any revisions. We didn't see any revisions for that. So hopefully we'll see the V5 source files come up pretty soon so you guys can cut your own.
Ideally, there would also be a change log so we would know what had changed. But
yeah. Next up, let's take a look at some motors. We've got new FPV cycle motors. We've seen various generations of the FPV cycle motors over the year or two that I've been doing this, at least. And we've got a new one in the Unibel design. So hopefully these are, even more push in advance over what he's been doing before.
Yeah, the FPV cycle 25 millimeter motor is one of my favorites, although there's a reason why it's not as distinct as it was. And I'll tell you that in a second. But one of the problems that they ran into with the last batch was that the sidewalls were slipping down. And Kebab actually said that they literally just used the wrong adhesive. They just grabbed the wrong bottle of adhesive for one batch. And he said, never again. We're doing Unibels. So that's good. Unibel's more durable. A little heavier though. I will say though, the reason I think this motor is less distinct than it was is that the original 25 millimeter motor, the Emeralds, it came in at something like 36 grams. And in fact, they still show a 35 or 36 gram weight on the page, 35 grams with 20 millimeter wires. That might be accurate, but, somebody weighed one of these Unibel motors with full length wires and it was like 40, 41 grams. So that's going to come down a little bit when you cut the wires off, somewhere between 36 grams and 40 grams. A 36 gram motor in the 25 millimeter class is exceptionally light for a motor of that size. A 40 gram motor in that class is pretty normal. And I think that there's other motors that you probably could be looking at, like the iFlight Sting 25 millimeter. Still, good motor. If you're wanting a 25 millimeter, now that it's a Unibel, it's going to be a lot more durable. I'm a fan of it. There's one other motor that I wanted to do this week, Blunty, and it is just another Zing motor. Looks like all the others, except this is their Cinelifter motor. Woohoo! 3110 in size. Impressive. Yeah.
Big old motor.
Yeah. We know that Zing makes good motors. We know that it's certainly a good looking design, very durable design. And for people looking for a Cinelifter motor, it's probably going to be in stock, whereas many other small batch motors might be more difficult to find. So wanted to get that out there. 900, 1250 and 1600 KV. So not going to be for like a 12S build. If I remember right, my 12S were like 400 KV.
Next up, we've got props. We're going to move on to some propellers. We've got new HQ props this week, the J40s. These are some juicy props from HQ.
Mm-hmm. What is a juicy prop?
A prop meant for juicy flight. That's what I would guess, but I'm not sure necessarily what makes a prop juicy.
I would think a juicy prop is designed to be smooth and responsive. Johnny FPV, of course, known for popularizing the juicy style, he uses a 4.9 inch prop to get more responsiveness. It looks like what they're doing here is it's a 5.1 inch prop, so it's larger diameter, but it seems like they're maybe going with a little bit of a thinner blade profile so they can still get less drag and more responsiveness without reducing diameter. Ultimately, of course, we'd have to fly them, and we haven't, so we can't really say too much. But there you go. Gemfan Hurricane 5.5 inch prop. And Blunty, I don't know if this is actually a new product. Sometimes products show up on the new product page of a store when they're not actually new. But I was just reminded that 5.5 inch is a thing, and I thought I'd take the opportunity to tell everybody else that it's out there. Have you ever flown 5.5 inch?
I have not. I've considered it, but I'm not really a action cam kind of guy, so I'm not sure. The application works for me, but pretty cool to see some options in the 5.5 inch category for people who are flying frames like the AOS 5.5, for instance.
Exactly. Yeah, the argument that guys like Chris Rosser make is that when you get up into the 700, 750 gram weight range, like most, and some people are closer to 800 grams with an action camera on, you really want a bigger prop than a 5-inch prop to have optimal disc loading. And Chris Rosser's AOS 5.5 inch frame is made for this size of prop. And if you fly a heavy 5-inch and you sometimes think your quad is too heavy or underpowered, you should give 5.5 inch a try. It's a really interesting spot between the stability of a 6-inch and the agility of a 5-inch. And and the efficiency of a 6-inch, it's definitely worth a try. This is the Gem Fans new sponsored prop with Alex Vanover. And I mostly wanted to include it because it is a new product. And of course, Alex Vanover certainly doesn't fly any bad stuff. I don't know what characteristics it's shooting for. It's available in a lot of different colors. That's about it. I don't feel like we have a lot to offer until one of us flies it. So I did want to mention that it's out there and say, it looks like it's got a relatively 5.136 is a middle pitch, somewhere between 5.1 by 3 and 5.1 by 4 is where most freestyle props tend to come. You know, we used to see 5 by 5, 5 by, you know, relatively high pitch props, but not so much anymore. Looks like it has a little thinner blade profile than the Hurricane. But other than that, I'm not, you know, don't have a lot more to say. Blunty, we got two chargers this month, two new chargers, the ISDT Air 8 500 watt and the 533 M6D AC. Which one do you want to do first?
Well, let's start with the ISDT since that's $70 okay. bucks.
Yeah.
You know, 500 watts, 20 amps, 8S. So that's pretty all cool.
Good specs. Yeah. Relatively good. I mean, I'm not going to go pull up other chargers and really dive into a spreadsheet, but $70 yeah. for 500 watts, 20 amps is in the ballpark of about right.
And for someone who uses bad air, for some reason, this also has bad air, which is yeah. a feature some people will want.
Bad air is stupid and no one should use it. It's dumb. I mean, there's nothing wrong with it. You're not a bad person if you use it. You're just wasting your money. No. all right, I won't be mean. What is bad air and who would use it, Blunty?
Bad air is a tracking system and like wireless information system and stuff for your batteries. And you run the, like you basically buy an extra piece that goes onto the batteries or you buy batteries with the extra piece. And then your charger can recognize the history of the battery through the piece.
Yeah. So this is the ISDT Bat Air BAP4 plugin. It's for up to a 4S battery and you plug it into the balance lead of your battery and then your charger can like detect it and know what battery it's charging and track stats. And there's a phone app and that all sounds good, except that you have to pay $5 for this stupid thing that then hangs off your balance port. Look how big it is. And then you have to buy one for every battery you want to track. So if you're like, if you have a big old Cinelifter and you own 4 or 6 batteries and your batteries cost $300 a piece, this makes sense. This makes some sense, right? You really want to take care of those batteries and track them. But if you're a typical FPV pilot who has 5, 10, 15, 20 or more little packs, you're not going to spend $5 a piece to buy a bad air plug-in for each of them. And that's why, from my opinion, this is kind of useless. But anyway, 500 watts, 20 amps. Of course, what we have to do is compare it to the venerable, the champion, the Hoda D6 Pro. Sometimes known as the Hobby Mate. How's it stack up?
It's pretty good. Doesn't have AC, obviously. You're going to need DC.
Yeah, so, you're going to need a power supply.
Yeah, that's going to be the price difference pretty much there, I think, is going to be that power supply. It also does 8S instead of 6S, which is kind of nice.
Mm-hmm. 500 watts is more than 325 watts. This is a single-channel charger or a dual-channel?
It's like dual-channel.
Is it? Is it though?
That's just two bad air plugins. So I would assume.
No, it comes with two of the plugs.
Oh, I see.
It's included. Okay. That's a $10 value right there, Blunty.
So fair enough. So $60 charger with $10 worth of bad air.
It's only a single channel though. So it's 500 watts, gotcha. 20 amps compared to 325, 15, but this is a dual channel charger. So you're essentially getting. You could argue that this is that you cut this price in half since you would have to buy two of these. Flip side might be that if you're doing parallel charging, the 500 watts, you could charge 5 or 10 batteries at a time off a single output.
Yeah.
So, okay. Now, you know, it's okay charger. Even if you take away the bad air stuff, it might be right for somebody.
We've talked before in the past, we've done some news articles and things about some issues that Toolkit RC has had in particular with quality control. And I can say I've repeatedly seen those issues over and over again on forums and through helping users and diagnosing issues and things like that. It may have improved lately. It's hard to tell, obviously, timeline-wise where it's at. But if you consider what we've seen in the past, Toolkit does not inspire quality in the name when I consider Toolkit. Yeah. One thing I'll say is that hopefully we can at least hope that Evan Turner is putting his name on this, or his company's name on this, with 533. So he has at least done some vetting on these, and hopefully they are QCing these units better that are coming to his factory. So,
yeah, and I actually asked Evan about this, and I'll tell you what he said in just a second, but I want to share my own personal experience. I'm going to testify here. We're in church. I was sent an M60AC, not the 533 version. Back when it first came out, Toolkit RC sent me an M60AC. I used it for a weekend, and by the end of the weekend, one of the channels had it was detecting the voltage wrong on one of the cells, and so I considered it not safe to use. It was reading like 0.2 volts high or something, and you could say, well, you just recalibrate it. No, it's something's messed up. It shouldn't do that. I think even after that, it died. I can't remember. I think it might have died. But anyway, it was done. I went to Rampage a couple weeks ago, and I accidentally grabbed the wrong charger. I grabbed a DC input charger, and I needed an I didn't have a power supply. So I bought an M60 AC at Rampage with my own money, because that's what they were selling. And one of the cells was miscalibrated. It was off by 0.2 volts. I recalibrated it. I used it all weekend. It was fine. Another person bought an M60 AC, and on both channels, one cell was miscalibrated and was reading like 0.2 volts high or something. And we recalibrated it, and it was fine. So Toolkit RC does not inspire confidence. Like, when you buy a charger, you want it to read the correct voltage. That's like the most basic thing it can do. And
you assume in the testing, right? Like you're getting a quality controlled device, hopefully. So in that quality control testing, they're checking things like, what is the voltage on the channels and are they correct? So like, some people are going to say like, well, you just calibrate it and then it works. But two problems there. One is that in one case, yours lost calibration over time, right? And we've seen that in other people's cases as well, from missing pins or issues with soldering and things like that. Mm-hmm. The other issue is that I shouldn't have to calibrate something I purchased that was quality controlled to be the correct voltage out of the factory.
And what else did they miss in the quality control that I don't know about?
Correct. Now, if they didn't spend the time on that, what else didn't happen?
Now, here's what I will say. I know that Toolkit RC can make good stuff, because what we've seen is there will be a batch of stuff and there will be a flurry of reports of problems. And then there'll be other people who say, I don't know what you're talking about. I've been using it for months or years and it's fine. And I think that Toolkit RC, just like on Monday, they make good stuff. And on Friday, they're all drunk and ready for the weekend and shit goes out that doesn't work. I'm exaggerating. But I asked Evan Turner, I said, when I saw this, I said, Evan, do you know about my opinion about Toolkit RC? And he was like, well, everybody I know at the races uses them and they're all fine. And I said, okay, man. And like you said at the beginning, Blunty, if 533 is putting their name on this product, number one, you can bet that Evan will stand behind him. And number two, I think there's a fair chance that they're making sure back at the factory that all of 533's chargers are being made on a Monday. So they'll be okay. Anyway, there it is. It does have a really cool feature where you start the charge and like you tell it, I'm charging at 1 amp or whatever, 4 amp, whatever. And then when it finishes, you just unplug the battery and then you just plug the next battery in and it just starts the next charge cycle without you having to push a button. That's kind of cool.
So one thing I do have to ask here, well, we probably should do the same comparison, right, that we typically would do. And I think this one is going to be a little more telling, because if you compare, you know, the M6 DAC to the HODA D6, I'm having trouble figuring out, maybe you can help me, what the benefit is.
325 watts, 15 amps, 200 watts, how many amps? Let's just make sure we get the spec. Built-in 200 watt power supply. So this says 325 watts, but I believe the AC power supply is only 200 watts. That's the DC. Yeah, AC 200 watts. So
comparable there. Okay.
That's comparable. Yes. Yeah. I don't know what the DC, I don't know if this is limited to 200 watts on DC as well. Usually you have a higher output on DC than on AC. Doesn't have an amp limit. Where's the amp limit? 200 watts, it says. Where's the amp limit? Additional information.
Yeah, I don't see that.
That's odd. You wouldn't usually want to know that.
Yeah, and also like the, what do you call that? The balance current is also good to know, right?
Yeah. Here we go. Charger power, 15 amp. So comparable.
Ah.
15 amp. Oh, and here we go. 15 amp at 350 watts for DC, I assume. So the specs are actually almost identical. in terms of the charging capability. Do they have the balance current? Yeah, 1 amp. That's pretty good. Balance current. So the balance current on the Hoda is higher by a fair whack, but 1 amp is fine. They look pretty comparable. This one has a USB quick charge output. It's got a USB plug on the back. The D6 Pro has a charger on the side, but I think it's only a 2 amp charger, not quick charge. They look pretty close.
Yeah, pretty similar.
118. Well, that's a big difference. 118 versus 150. I would take, obviously, I mean, it goes without saying, I would take the D6 Pro. It's cheaper. It's absolutely bulletproof. Nothing is 100% bulletproof, but it's really close to bulletproof as they come. Excellent track record of quality and so forth. And the performance is about the same. So I would take
the D6
Pro. But kudos to 533. That continuous work function is pretty cool to not have to keep plugging in, hitting buttons to keep your batteries charging.
We've got a receiver to check out, a new Express LRS receiver. We don't take a look at all of them because there are quite a few that come out, but we do take a look at the different or interesting ones or first ones from a company, things like that. So one we've got today is from SkyStars RC, and it's a diversity receiver.
Now that's pretty cool. Diversity means you have two antennas. So like that thing that happens where when you turn around to come home and your antenna is behind your battery and suddenly you lose signal. With diversity antennas, you can mount the antennas so that that doesn't happen. There are a few Express LRS receivers with diversity, but not very many. Maytek makes one, for example. It's nice to see SkyStars coming in with another one. I think the big question, Blunty, we always have to ask when a new vendor of Express LRS hardware comes out is, how good are, sometimes we've seen Flywoo where the oscillator was the wrong value and it wouldn't bind and it lost link, or Beta FPV where there was a missing capacitor. So of course I don't know if we know how good quality this SkyStars one is, but
yeah, I'm not 100% sure. How it's going to end up with quality wise. I do believe they have a target in the configurator, but I'm not 100% sure. I was going to
That would indicate that they had sort of worked with the Express LRS devs that means that somebody's looked at their design.
Yes, that's and this good. Does look like it has increased telemetry power as well. It's listed as 23 dBm, 250 milliwatts of telemetry power. So.
Okay. Oh, that's interesting. So you're going to go further without losing telemetry. It's not going to affect your control link range, but your telemetry range is going to be further. And it does have an amplifier as well for the telemetry transmissions. Sorry, Blunty, is that LNA? Is that a receive amplifier or a transmit amplifier?
I'm not sure which one that's going to be, but I know it. I just don't list the telemetry power there. So,
this is a cool option for people looking for long distance transmissions with the diversity and the amplifier. As far as people just doing normal flying, I'm not sure if there's going to be as much advantage. And it remains to be seen how the quality of SkyStars will bear out, but it is a good sign that they worked with the devs. So it's out there and it's linked in the video description if you want to pick it up. We got one more small thing to do, Blunty, and then we're going to talk about the giveaway. And that is this. What are we looking at here?
Yeah, so we've got the Rush FPV Blade Power Filter Board Lite. So this is going to be basically just 3 TVS diodes to help with spike protection, like voltage spike protection. Instead of like Rush also sells a power filter board that combines a capacitor, two capacitors actually, and sort of is like meant to be mounted like right at the ESC and stuff. This seems to be just another option for ways to mount.
It
kind of ties in well with a capacitor, similar to like the FETTEC style, or I think FPV cycle style.
Yeah, and you can see an example of how they are mounting it. That original Rush FPV power board was meant to go with a Rush ESC and didn't work well with every other ESC. So here you can see you combine it with your own capacitor. There's various ways you could mount it, but that has just a little more voltage spike protection compared to a capacitor by itself. I got to say, Blunty, I saw a post on Facebook where somebody with an oscilloscope screwed around with their ESCs and their motors and made an argument that TVS diodes, once you have a good capacitor, a TVS diode is not actually helping at all. And I don't know if I kind of felt like, well, that can't be right, but it sure did seem like the oscilloscope was showing that.
Yeah, that was also Jai Smith, as a matter of fact. We can talk about him again. So, but yeah, Dry did some testing, and he basically, on a bench, tried to force spikes. So his thing was like, yes, the TVS dials do clamp spikes, but how much over a capacitor, like what kind of spikes are we seeing? Right, that was the big, like, the big idea behind the question. And in his case, he was even like, you know, like stopping the props from full spin and like trying to force, like, you know, backwards braking and doing everything he could to force spikes. And he wasn't able to force anything that was high enough to make any difference really over a capacitor. So
yeah, so there's this idea that we have these crazy voltage spikes, but what would cause a voltage spike if not turning a prop to full and then like jamming a stick into it and stopping it suddenly? And if he couldn't make voltage spikes by intentionally abusing the motors, then the question is, would that ever really happen in the field? So are we all just wasting money by putting TVS diodes on our ESCs?
Well, wasting money is relative, right? $4.50 is not much compared to what a quad costs. And if there is some spike in there, maybe that matters. Also, it might matter with thresholds. So like 4S versus 6S versus like design specs on some FETs, like, you know, who knows exactly where everything's going to play out there.
Okay.
I don't think it's a bad idea to run them. I don't know. I've definitely seen quite a bit of testing, though, that seems to indicate that there's not a huge difference. So,
all right. Well, good capacitor should be your first line of defense, but this could be an additional line of defense. Okay. Well, it's time to do the giveaway. Every month we give away one of the products, and I think I know what it's going to be, Blunty. I think I know what I want it to be this month. It's going to be a set of Avatar goggles.
All right.
Should it be? I mean, I was kind of joking when I said it. They're so expensive, like $600.
I don't want to. I don't know. Like, yeah, my thought is just like, I mean, that might be cool, but it also might be like, I feel like that money could be spent better other places.
Right? I kind of, especially because I don't even think the firmware is done. We could do another giveaway when the firmware is done and maybe think about it.
Yeah.
All right. Here's where my mind was originally going. To celebrate the new Unibel 25 millimeter motor from FPV Cycle, we're going to give away a set, several sets, because it's only going to be like $100 per set. We're going to give away a few sets of either the FPV Cycle 25 millimeter motor, four motors, or to acknowledge the fact that now the 25 millimeter Imperial is kind of the same weight as the Zing 2506. Like, that used to be one of its advantages, was it was lighter, and now it's kind of not. And they come in the same KV. You may choose that or the Zing 2506. It's up to you. Your pick. And I guess we'll give away four sets. How about we give away four sets to four individual winners? So if you want to enter that giveaway, there are instructions down in the video description. There's a link to a Google form where you can enter your name, your email address, and other information to enter. I will announce the winner via a pinned comment at the top of this comment section on this video. So if you're wondering, have I won? Has he announced the winners yet? Go look down there. And if the pinned comment isn't there, I haven't announced the winners yet. It usually takes me a week or 10 days to actually draw the winner and announce it. And I will also make a community post on my YouTube channel just to make sure everybody knows they win. That's going to do it, Blunty. Another month in the bag.
Another month. Yeah, we made it. And if you made it all the way to the end of this, we definitely appreciate you making it all the way to the end. If you're somehow still listening to this, go hit that subscribe button if you're also not in that. I bet that's a small difference in the Venn diagrams. But if you're somehow not, go hit that subscribe. Go hit that notification bell. Also, go check out the JB Livestream Clips channel, Joshua Bardwell Livestream Clips, where I am now running all the clips from the live streams, so you can see them if you don't watch the live stream.
In fact, there is going to be an excerpt from this session, even though this wasn't technically a live stream. We had a little off, you know, behind the scenes conversation that I thought would make a good clip. So if you want to see Blunty and I talk about our internet service and experiences with our internet providers, I thought it was pretty entertaining. That's going to be on the Livestream Clips channel. So go check out Joshua Bardwell Livestream Clips. That's going to do it. I will see you next month, Blunty. Happy flying to you guys.
Thanks a lot. Take it easy, guys.